What a weekend. The Masters wrapped up. We had another incredible week in the NFL between rain-soaked games and upsets and Hail Marys at the buzzer. I mean, what a Sunday. What a weekend overall. I mean, the racing was fun as well. I mean, we'll get to all of that. Unfortunately, not going to get to the racing today. We will save that for tomorrow. We'll talk today about Week 10 in the NFL. Again, all the action that happened yesterday. We'll take a look at Monday Night Football coming up tonight between the Vikings and the Bears. We'll take a look, obviously, at the Masters that wrapped up this weekend and all that coming up here on this show. But Nevada is 4-0. The Wolfpack escaped a little more of a scarier situation there in Vegas than I thought it would be against the winless New Mexico Lobos. Nevada getting the 7-point win over New Mexico, 27-20. And again, kind of like their game against Utah State, a bit of a slow build, a bit of a slow burn for Nevada kind of throughout this game. And New Mexico did a great job of keeping it close through the entire game, really. I mean, they jumped quickly onto Nevada there at the start and was just able to kind of have the upper hand there at the very beginning. But Nevada being that tough, gritty team that we've seen this year, I mean, they were able to fight back against Wyoming there in the end and win the game in overtime. They've had a couple dominating performances there after that this season, and now in this game against New Mexico, just continued to fight and continued to show that winning spirit. And going back down to Vegas for a second time, playing in a different stadium, able to handle kind of all that, in this game against New Mexico. And, both teams kind of started off slowly. I mean, New Mexico had the first possession. They punted after 8 plays. Then Nevada punted after 6. New Mexico then punts after 8 plays. Then Nevada turns it over on down. Saw a lot of teams, both collegiately and professionally, fourth down was a big thing this weekend, going forward on fourth down. But Nevada turned it over on down then and there. So the first 2 possessions from both teams, no one really producing anything, no one getting anything going. And then New Mexico able to get a touchdown drive there late in the first quarter. They scored with about 8 seconds left on the clock. Trey Hall caught a 16-yard pass from Bryson Carroll to make it 7-0 New Mexico. And then the Lobos go for an onside kick, and they recover it. I mean, when you look at the way that game started, neither team really getting anything going. New Mexico finally puts a touchdown drive together and gutsy to go for that onside kick. But, I mean, if you finally think you have some momentum going, why not try to build on that? And, yeah, it was a bit of a risk that could have put Nevada into an easier scoring situation or just made their drive, put them in a little bit more of a nicer starting position. But it was a risk that ended up paying off for New Mexico. They recover that onside kick. 7 plays later, they're kicking a field goal. George Steinkamp from 26 yards out makes it 10-0 New Mexico. Then Nevada gets the ball back. 5 plays, they punt. So at this point, I mean, New Mexico is a 10-0 lead, and they're keeping Nevada from getting anything going. And that's when, you try not to panic too early on in these games, especially with the way the Utah State game went. I was a little worried at the first quarter and first stages of that game. Then Nevada, of course, comes back to dominate and have the easier win there in the second half against Utah State. So I'm trying not to panic as they punt the ball away on their third possession. And New Mexico was up 10-0 right now. But then again, the defense stepped up, forced a 3-and-out, forced New Mexico to punt the ball back to Nevada. 8 plays later, Nevada finally gets on the board. Brandon Talton with a 28-yard field goal to make it 10-3. That came with just over 3.5 minutes to go in the second quarter. And then the defense coming up with a big-time play, forcing an interception there by New Mexico. That puts Nevada into a relatively good position. I mean, really, all they needed was one play. One play and 33 yards later. I mean, do I have to tell you who scored?
Carson Strong is back as the Nevada quarterback. Slot left and right. Toa on Strong's right hip. First and 10. Snap back to Carson. He steps up. He's got time. He loads up. Wide open in the end zone. Dubs back line. Touchdown! Dubs along the back line was wide open, and Strong just lofted it out there. The only question was, would Romeo stay in bounds? He had his back foot down. We look at a replay. That looks like a touchdown.
And it was a touchdown. Once again, Carson Strong to Romeo Dubs. And between the Utah State game and this game, I mean, that's been the connection for Nevada to terrorize opponents, to terrorize secondaries. And because of that touchdown, Talton with the extra point, we are now tied at 10 with just under 3.5 minutes to go. So essentially, 20 seconds after they got on the board, Nevada is tying the game up. And that's the kind of explosive plays we've been able to see from the offensive and defensive sides. When the defense comes up with a huge turnover, a couple plays later, in this case, essentially the next play, Nevada goes on and gets a touchdown there to tie up the game at 10. However, New Mexico get the ball back again. Another big stop from the defense, forcing a three and out. New Mexico punts it. And then, unfortunately, the streak is broken. It's the first interception thrown by Carson Strong this season, and it's unfortunate, but what a run he had. I mean, just the start of the season, going back to last season as well, he's been just incredibly accurate and incredibly smart and decisive with the ball, so it was a bummer to see him get his first interception of the season here against New Mexico, but that was indeed the case after the Pac defense forced New Mexico to punt. Carson Strong turning the ball over. New Mexico, five plays later, able to turn that into a field goal with about a little over a minute left. Steinkamp hit a 48-yarder, made it 13-10. New Mexico, then Nevada with three plays, just under a minute left on the clock, runs out the half. So 13-10, New Mexico at the half, but saw a lot better play from Nevada in the second quarter on both sides of the ball. So that rocky first quarter kind of put behind them, able to get on the board, tie the game up at 10. Unfortunate interception that led to the go-ahead field goal there by New Mexico before the half to make it 13-10. But a lot better play from Nevada in that second quarter. Then we get to the third quarter. Defense did a great job, but the offense came right out. A long drive, 11 play, 53 yards. Brandon Talton again, 34 yards out, able to tie the game up at 13. Defense forces a New Mexico punt, and then Nevada gets the ball back. Four plays, 82 yards to put more points on the board. And come on, by now you should know who's scoring.
First and 10, Nevada at their own 39. Strong in the shotgun, slot left and right. Four-man rush for New Mexico. Here they come. Strong sets up, goes long, down the right side. Dubs at the five. Dubs is in. Touchdown, Nevada. 61 yards. Nevada's in front.
Just like that. Big playability.
Just like that. And Nevada now has a 20-13 lead, that coming with just over 4.5 minutes to go in the game. But a 61-yard strike from Carson Strong to Romeo Dubs. Again, those two just wreaking havoc on opponent secondaries. Especially this game in Utah State, but they've had some great hookups all throughout this season. But that gave Nevada a 20-13 lead with just over 4.5 minutes to go there in the third quarter. Then New Mexico, again, starting to look a little desperate. They went for it on fourth down, did not get it. So Nevada's defense, again, stepping up, forcing New Mexico to turn the ball over on downs. Unfortunately, Nevada was forced to punt in their ensuing possession, but their defense stepping up again, forcing New Mexico to punt after seven plays. Then Nevada gets the ball back, and again, 81 yards in five plays. And, yeah, we know what's going to happen.
First and 10, Nevada throwing 41. Strong is back, steps up in the pocket, goes long, down the middle. Dubs on the post at the five. Touchdown, Nevada!
You just
59
can't.
Yards, Mike. It's bookends. 61 earlier, 59 yards now. Dubs, his third touchdown catch of the game.
What a performance from those two young men. Again, Carson Strong and Romeo Dubs hooking up for all three Nevada touchdowns in this game. And, of course, he had the 133-yarder, which was nice. But then he, on top of that, a 61 and 59-yard strike. I mean, that is utterly ridiculous to see those type of plays all in one game. But that is what Nevada's offense has been able to do this year. Carson Strong and Romeo Dubs just continue to be be a force for Nevada in this season. So that touchdown puts the Pack up 27-13. New Mexico was able to answer with a 7-play touchdown drive of their own as Bobby Cole ran it in from 1 yard out to make it 27-20 with just about 4 minutes to go. And then New Mexico defense stepped up and made and forced Nevada to punt the ball after a 3-and-out. So they got the ball back with right around 2.5, 3 minutes left, and then Nevada's defense stepping up one last time, forcing New Mexico to turn the ball over on downs, and then just 4 plays later, Nevada able to secure the win against New Mexico. So Nevada halfway through their season, now 4-0, and next to San Jose State, who's also 4-0, but Nevada is kings of the Mountain West at this point. They've got a tough second half of the season with San Diego State, Hawaii, Fresno State, and San Jose State as their last 4 games of the season. But, I mean, the way this team is playing, the way they continue to fight through 4 quarters, I mean, I'm looking forward to every single one of these games. And you never want to get too far ahead of yourself and just start thinking a team can go undefeated. But with this 8-game schedule, with the way Nevada is playing, granted, they, you know, 3 of their last 4 opponents right now are over 500. San Diego State and Fresno State 3-1. San Jose State 4-0. Hawaii is at the 500 mark at 2-2. So with the way Nevada has been able to start this season, it's been a fantastic start. But if they can finish this season the same way, I mean, even though this is only an 8-game season, it would be one that Nevada, I mean, this football program, the fans, myself as somebody that's involved in the media around this school, it would be one that we wouldn't forget just with the performances that this team has put on this year. So it's going to be a tough second half of the season, but very winnable for Nevada, and really can't wait to see. Their next game is coming up on the 21st, so this next weekend they will be at home against San Diego State, the 3-1 Aztecs against the 4-0 Nevada Wolfpack. And then speaking of this Carson Strong to Romeo Dubs connection, because it's become such a really a centerpiece of this offense, it's funny to think that it's really come to life in the last 2 games. Because you look at their first game against Wyoming, and there were still some big passes, but it wasn't all really to Romeo Dubs. Carson Strong had a 26-yard touchdown pass to Torrey Horton there in the first quarter of that game. Then, of course, the 50-yarder in that game, the 50-yard touchdown pass from Carson Strong went to Cole Turner. So there were, and Cole Turner actually caught 2 touchdown passes in that game against Wyoming. But the only touchdown pass that Romeo Dubs caught against him, he only caught, think about the Utah State and the New Mexico game, the way Carson Strong and Dubs have hooked up. They only had one touchdown between the two. So Carson Strong to Romeo Dubs, that connection only had 1 touchdown against Wyoming, but it was the game-winning touchdown. It was the one in overtime that put him up 37-34. So even though that was the only touchdown connection between those two in that game, that was a massive touchdown, obviously. It gave him the win. Then you look at the game against UNLV, and again, they had the 65-yard touchdown pass there from Strong to Dubs. But that was the only, again, that's the only touchdown connection that those two had. So the first 2 games of the season, Strong and Dubs had hooked up for just 2 touchdowns at that point. Then you look at the last 3 games, and they had 1 in the first quarter against Utah State, 2 in the second quarter against Utah State. So they had 3 against the Aggies and then 3 against New Mexico. So they went from having just 2 touchdowns between the two of them in terms of Strong throwing it to Dubs, 2 touchdowns that way in the first 2 games, 6 touchdowns that way in the last 2. So I feel like those guys are just continuing to find more rhythm. They're just getting more and more comfortable, more and more deadly. I think this second half of the season is going to be a lot of fun to see what those two guys can, how those two guys can continue to produce. But those weren't the only games on the Mountain West schedule. Talked about it on Friday's show, Boise State's big 52-21 win over Colorado State. But some other results from Saturday. Fresno State, speaking of Utah State, Fresno State beat up on Utah State 35-16. San Diego State got a 34-10 win over Hawaii. And San Jose State stays undefeated after a 34-17 win over UNLV. Then in terms of West Coast football on the Pac-12 scoreboard, Oregon holding off Washington State 43-29 after the Cougars were sticking it to Oregon. At one point, the Cougars had a 19-7 lead before Oregon really turned it on from that point and were able to take the advantage. But the Cougars making the Ducks work for it there through the first half of that game. Then USC uses another late score to beat a team from Arizona, as this time it's the University of Arizona. But USC beats U of A 34-30. And then Colorado looked like they were going to kind of cruise comfortably past Stanford when they had a 28-9 lead just under 9 minutes to go in the third quarter. But then Stanford just starts to storm back in this game and made it a three-point game, 35-32, over 2.5 minutes to go. So Stanford really made Colorado sweat for it and work for it there at the end of that game. But Colorado still now 2-0 on the year, and they're looking pretty sharp with their wins over Stanford and UCLA. Then Washington beat Oregon State 27-21 in kind of a slow burner of a game, but it was entertaining. Washington finally getting their first game of the season under their belts. And then after we had two games canceled, Cal's game against Arizona State was canceled, and UCLA's game against Utah got canceled as well. So on Sunday, yesterday, Cal and UCLA got to play a game. Cal finally got to just play a game this year, and UCLA got to play their second game. But the Bruins at home put a 34-10 beatdown on Cal. So UCLA goes to 1-1 this year. Cal now 0-1 on the year. But in terms of West Coast college football there between the Mountain West and the Pac-12, that was the action. Nevada now 4-0 on the year. Can't wait to see what the second half of their season has in store. But speaking of second half of the season, the NFL firmly now into the second half with one game left in Week 10. And so we will take a look at the Sunday slate, all of the results from yesterday, when we come back from the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. What a Week 10 NFL day we had yesterday. Some heavy rain, some hail, a Hail Mary, had everything. Fantastic. The NFL season continues to deliver entertainment. And it was odd. It was odd having more morning games yesterday than afternoon games. I don't know why. I guess I'm so used to having a packed morning schedule. But it felt nice. It felt nice to see five games end and six games start back up. That was a nice change of pace. I enjoyed it. Unfortunately, I wish I could have done a little bit better with my predictions. I'm 8-5 on the week. So either way, I will have a winning record, either 8-6 or 9-5. But I was hoping to get back to that double-digit correct number. And unfortunately, that will not happen. Needed both primetime games after the afternoon window of games had ended yesterday to get to double digits. And quickly lost that hope when Baltimore lost New England. But we'll get into that. Let's start with those AM games, though. The games that kicked off at 10 AM, with that window, I went 3-2. Picked Cleveland, even though awful game for them. I mean, really awful game by both teams. Houston, just again, could not get anything going. And then Cleveland managed to get out of their way enough to win the game. I mean, 10-7. I was just waiting for that final Houston touchdown. I kept seeing 13-10 or 14-10 haunting me in that score. But Cleveland somehow hung on in that game to win 10-7. It was their fewest points in a win since Week 8 of the 2012 season. So Cleveland not used to winning with a low score like that. But when you're playing Houston this year, you can pretty much win in any way imaginable. Kick three field goals, you would have still had enough to beat Houston yesterday. But Cleveland able to hang on, so I got that one right. Green Bay barely survived against Jacksonville. What a game. I mean, part of me thinks that Green Bay really overlooked Jacksonville with Green Bay being at home. They were 6-2 coming into the game. Obviously, Jacksonville just with the one win on the year. So I feel like Green Bay was definitely kind of looking past Jacksonville, and the Jaguars were quick to remind them, hey, we might not have as nice of a record as you guys, but we're still professionals, and you better give us some respect or we'll give you an upset. And Green Bay was able to just narrowly hang on there 24-20 to get to 7-2 for the second straight season. So Green Bay, again, kind of showing that fight that we saw last year. And, again, Aaron Rodgers doing some great things for that Packers team. But, yes, they are 7-2 now with a little bit of breathing room as it stands in the NFC North. We'll see what happens tonight on Monday Night Football. But Green Bay able to escape Jacksonville. You know what? Jake Luton, not half bad. Not half bad. You know, he kind of carries himself nicely in the pocket. He doesn't seem to make too many dumb decisions. And, you know, he's given Jacksonville a fighting chance. And it seems as though between Gardner Minshew and Jake Luton, they have quarterbacks out there that'll fight, that'll scrap. You know, they just don't have the overall talent to really hang with some of these teams like Green Bay. But Jake Luton, you know what? I mean, I thought it was all downhill from Jacksonville and hard to think it could be any more downhill than what it already is. But he's doing a fairly good job. He's doing an okay job for Jacksonville this season. I mean, none of us expected them to be any kind of, at least I didn't, expect them to be any kind of competitor there in the AFC South. I thought once Minshew went down, this team was just going to get blown out right and left. And Jake Luton, you know, a tough loss last week against Houston, only lost by 4 to Green Bay. There might be something there for the Jaguars and Jake Luton. But as for right now, he's doing a good job, kept Jacksonville competitive, but Green Bay did get the win, so I was happy to pick that game right. And then Tampa Bay with the bounce-back victory there over Carolina, 46-23. Of course, Ronald Jones had that ridiculous 98-yard touchdown run, the longest in franchise history. And the game still relatively close at that point, so that was not only a big touchdown in terms of the longest in Buccaneers history, but also for the game itself, that came at a big moment for Tampa Bay. But Brady, solid bounce back game for the Buccaneers. That team, you know, the defense for Tampa Bay really needed a pick me up after their just atrocious game against New Orleans. And, you know, the Panthers did put up 23, but Tampa Bay's defense got some nice stops. Definitely looked better this week than they did last week and were able to bounce back and now go to 7-3. And with a certain injury that New Orleans is now facing, which of course we'll get to when we get to the afternoon games here in just a bit. But Tampa Bay, that door could be wide open for them to take that division now. But nonetheless, they bounced back nicely there against Carolina, got to 7-3, and the Panthers now at 3-7. But then we go to the two games that I missed in the 10 a.m. window, Washington and Detroit. Man, I was really hoping Alex Smith was going to get that win, and he had a really solid game, I feel like, for Washington, especially when they were down, trailing 27-24, to have that drive, to get him into field goal position, tied up at 27. But then Detroit, I mean, there was some mental lapses there for the Washington defense, but you know what? You got to hand to the Lions. On a day where Stafford goes down with a thumb injury, this team hung in there. And then Matt Prater with the game-winning 59-yard field goal as time expired. We've seen some long field goals this year, but that one was pretty crisp looking. And Detroit able to get the win 30-27 there at home. They go to 4-5 now on the year as Washington falls to 2-7. But ultimately, you know what? I thought Alex Smith looked good. You know, you kind of cringe every time he's there taking a snap because you just don't want to see him get hurt like he did again. But, man, it feels good to see him out there. I hope he is the guy moving forward for Washington because I feel like he still has so much to give to a team in terms of on-field production. And, yeah, it might not be as flashy or as, you know, he might not be as mobile as he was prior, but he can still give a team a fighting chance. And I think he showed that yesterday with Washington. So Detroit got a good win at home, but I think Alex Smith continues to show that he's a fighter and he's going to fight for his opportunity to be a quarterback all the way until he either retires or someone tells him it's just not good for his health anymore. And the other game I missed in the morning, Philadelphia and the Giants. I mean, you know what? You might as well flip a coin when it comes down to the NFC East. The only reason I really went with Philadelphia is because I do have them to win this division. So, I mean, they are in first place still with this 3-5-1 record. But the Giants, I mean, they're 3-7. And I got to be honest, watching that game yesterday, I mean, not that it really means a whole lot, but I feel like the Giants are looking like the team now that's poised to take the NFC East. Not that that's, again, something to really boast about this year, but Daniel Jones, you know, when he runs and doesn't trip over himself, he's a pretty decent runner. He's got some speed. So the Giants had a solid win yesterday, 27-17. The Eagles just looked completely lost and awful. Not that's really anything new for any of these teams in the NFC East this year. So we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, Washington now 2-7. So, I mean, still, you think about the Washington football team being 2-7. Eagles and Giants only have 3 wins. So it's not like they're super far off, even with the loss to Detroit yesterday. But definitely, I feel like the Giants are just looking like a little bit more of the poised team after the game yesterday to possibly take control there in the NFC East. But we'll have to wait and see. But those were the morning games. I went 3-2. Which brings my Sunday a.m. Window of games record to 51-28 on the season. So, you know, still proud of the overall record, but wish I would have had a little bit of a better morning yesterday. But I had a better afternoon. The 6 games in the 1 o'clock window, 3 games kicked off at 105, another 3 kicked off at 125, able to go 4-2 in that part of the day. The 4 I got, picked Vegas over Denver. The Raiders now 5 straight home wins over the Broncos. And there's not a whole lot for me to say on this game. Vegas looked good. John Gruden, again, you feel like anytime there's a divisional game, John Gruden is going to get that team even more ready and even more focused. I feel like because he himself gets more amped up and more focused for a divisional game. So especially at home, I just feel like it was going to be the Raiders game to lose. Denver, I mean, Drew Lock again, kind of dealing with some injury, but ultimately Vegas able to do the job they should have done at home against Denver. I mean, the Raiders are a better team than the Broncos this year. So to see them get the 37-12 win, not overly surprising. Vegas now goes to 6-3 as they prepare for their second game against Kansas City this season, which is Sunday Night Football, the upcoming Week 11. So that'll be a massive game for Vegas and also could be a huge game in terms of the AFC West standings as we get ready to come down the home stretch. But Vegas, solid game there against Denver, 37-12, the winners. Picked that game right. Picked Arizona over Buffalo. I said it to Terry on Friday. I feel like the Bills and Cardinals could be the game of the week. I do not think I was wrong. Unbelievable game against Buffalo and Arizona. I mean, back and forth. It looked like Buffalo was going to run away with it. Then Arizona forces this comeback. Then Buffalo gets a touchdown with 34 seconds left in the game. I'm thinking, what a game from Arizona. But, man, Buffalo's going to escape the desert with a victory. And then Arizona gets the ball back, and it feels like 2 or 3 plays go by. They're on the Buffalo 40 or right around there. All of a sudden, I'm thinking, hey, wait a minute. Kyler Murray's got one of the strongest arms in the game. He could throw it from his 40. He's on Buffalo's 40. Arizona has a very good chance of a Hail Mary win here, or at least a Hail Mary option where you can get it fully into the end zone. And first off, I mean, talk about that play. Kyler Murray scrambles, looks like he's going to go down, then looks like he's just running out of time and space as he goes towards the sideline. When he threw it up, I thought for sure, all right, this ball is going to get batted out of bounds, game over. Buffalo's going to win. But when you have DeAndre Hopkins standing in the end zone, and he is one of the best receivers in the NFL, you always give yourself a chance. And DeAndre Hopkins over 3 different Buffalo defenders hauls it in, maintains possession all the way to the ground, and Arizona wins 32-30. What a game in the desert. And the Cardinals now, with that win and the Rams win over the Seahawks, Arizona is first place in the NFC West. And I have absolutely no problem with that. Man, that team is fun to watch this year. But I was pumped that I picked Arizona to win that game and they came through for me. The New Orleans did get the win over San Francisco 27-13, but at what cost? With Drew Brees now going down, you know, broken ribs on both sides of his body. He had a collapsed lung, so he is going to be out for some time. And now it comes down to, you know, the New Orleans Saints. They were able to do this last year when they had Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom Hill. Can they do it this year with Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston? That's the big question. And Winston I mean, didn't look great. He did not look great in his time against San Francisco. So if you're the New Orleans Saints, you sit here 7-2, but Tampa Bay now right behind you. And yeah, New Orleans has the season sweep of Tampa Bay, so they have that tiebreaker in their back pocket. But depending on how long Drew Brees is out for, Tampa Bay could be ready to make a charge to the front of that division and possibly just try to fight off a late New Orleans surge if Brees comes back at the end of the season. So we'll have to wait and see how long Brees is really out for it. But the Saints did get the win, but it seems as though they may have been put into a very tough position here as we get close to the home stretch of the season, depending on with how long Drew Brees is out. But the Saints do get the win. San Francisco now has lost three straight games for the first time since 2018. And they seem to be slowly kind of losing contact with the other three teams in the NFC West that are all... I mean, Seattle's not looking that great right now, but Arizona and LA looking pretty good. And then Pittsburgh gets the win over Cincinnati, 36-10. No surprise. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, with him being out there, you knew the Steelers were going to manhandle Cincinnati. I mean, the Bengals are a better team, I think, than they were last year, but still, this is the Steelers with Big Ben. And, I mean, Chase Claypool, again, had a really impressive game for Pittsburgh. Their defense, again, just making some big plays. Now, with the Steelers have 10 straight wins over Cincinnati in this series. I mean, it's been dominated by the Steelers, and yesterday it was also a game dominated by the Steelers, which, again, I don't think surprises us at all when Ben Roethlisberger was out there for Pittsburgh. So those are the four games I got right in the afternoon, the two games that I missed. I did miss the Seattle Seahawks. Counting on that offense to kind of have the same production they had against Buffalo, and I thought maybe their defense would be able to stop LA a few more times and they were able to stop the Bills. But the Seahawks defense, again, couldn't do anything against the Rams really yesterday, and the offense looked about as bad as it's looked all season yesterday against the Rams, in my opinion. So the Seattle Seahawks could be, you know, slowly unraveling on the offensive end, which, if that's the case, this team is going to lose contact with Los Angeles and Arizona quickly in the NFC West. And with the Seahawks and Cardinals having a big matchup coming up on this Thursday night to kick off Week 11, Hall, you better bet that that's going to be a massive game in terms of how these NFC West plays out coming down the stretch. And my feeling right now, Arizona wins that game. We'll see if I feel the same way on Thursday. And the other game I missed... another one possession loss from the Chargers, and at this point, I'm just expecting them to lose by a possession. I almost was hoping it would just be 29-14, so I wouldn't have to sit here and look at another one possession game lost. But nope, they managed to score just enough to get it to 8 points and then miss an onside kick so that once again, the Chargers can lose by one possession. God, this is killing me. Just because Herbert is playing some really good football. I mean, honestly, the team has played some good football this year. It just is heartbreaking, these games that they've lost. They've let get away from the double-digit leads that have been going away. And they were trailing at halftime. And I thought, okay, the Chargers are 1-1 this year when they're trailing at halftime. So that gives them a better chance that they were in the lead. But it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. But Tua looked good. Herbert still looked good as well. Both young guys, top five picks in the draft. I think they show that their teams were smart for picking them. The Dolphins now a 6-3 start for the first time since all the way back in 2001. And the Dolphins, I mean, with Tua now, I think really getting into more of a rhythm, getting some more confidence out there to watch this. And I mean, we'll talk about Sunday Night Football here momentarily, but with the way New England now has looked in their last two games, Cam Newton's starting to look like he's coming back to life. And if that's the case, I mean, not to say that New England will make some charge to contend for that division, but if you have Miami and Buffalo at the top duking it out, and then New England now with a Cam Newton that, again, looks like he's kind of coming back to what he was at the start of the year, the AFC East could be a lot more interesting coming down the stretch than maybe what it looked like a few weeks ago. But that was it. So I went 4-2 in the afternoon session yesterday, which brings my Sunday PM window record for this year up to 23-12. So really the Sunday AM window and the Sunday PM window, I'm doing a solid job there. It's the prime time records that are getting me down. And speaking of that, you get to Sunday Night Football last night in a rain-drenched Foxborough Foxborough, Massachusetts, and New England able to hold on 23-17 again in a game where Baltimore just kind of stuttered offensively. And, I mean, I'm not sure what more you can say. I mean, again, Lamar Jackson had some good plays, but he's kind of missing that extra edge to him. He just doesn't seem to have that same kind of burst, that same kind of playmaking ability this year that he had last year. And also with Baltimore being held under 20 points, that's the first time in 32 games that's happened. So you can say it's a little bit on the weather, sure, but you know what? For a team that plays in Baltimore, Maryland, I'm not sure I'm going to throw all of that game last night on the weather. Like, New England's defense made some good plays. Their offense came through when they needed to at times. And New England just kind of outclassed Baltimore last night. I mean, it wasn't necessarily a pretty game on either side of the ball, but still, New England played a harder game than Baltimore last night and were able to come away with the victory. So now New England 4-5. Not super far behind Baltimore, who's at 6-3, and then again the Bills at 7-3. So there are a couple games in between these two teams, but the Patriots, they have games against those teams remaining on their schedule. So we'll see. We'll see with Cam kind of coming back to life, New England can make some kind of run at the AFCs. I don't think that's going to happen. I think best case scenario, New England's a wild card team, but still might be a little more fun there in the AFC East as we come down the stretch of this season. But picked Baltimore last night, didn't get it, so my Sunday night football record now falls to 4-6 on the year. Sunday night football and then Tuesday night football, the two areas where I have a losing record. I have not been able to avenge my one and only loss on Tuesday night football this year, and probably won't get a chance to do that. But nonetheless, 8-5 this week. We'll see what happens with Monday Night Football tonight. We will talk about that Monday Night Football matchup between Minnesota and Chicago coming up next on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Well, Week 10 comes to a close tonight on Monday Night Football when the 3-5 Minnesota Vikings meet the 5-4 Chicago Bears in an NFC North divisional matchup. Minnesota favored by 3 points on the road, where they have a 2-2 record. The Bears 2-2 at home this year. So someone's going to 3-2, someone's going to 2-3. Whether it's Minnesota on the road or Chicago at home, that's happened to somebody. And this should be an interesting game, because obviously Chicago had that amazing start to their year, right? They come back from, you know, they make that fourth quarter comeback against Detroit to get the win there in the opening week of the season, 27-23. And they have the 17-13 win over the Giants, the 30-26 comeback win over Atlanta. And that makes them 3-0. And at the time, no one was buying it. You know, everyone kind of saying Chicago's the least impressive 3-0 team, not convinced this team's going to keep it up. And then they stumble against Indianapolis. They lose 19-11, so they go to 3-1. Then they bounce back. They have that 20-19 win on Thursday Night Football over Tampa Bay, where Tom Brady forgot it was fourth down. Then they have a grinded-out win on the road against Carolina to get to 5-1. They were 5-1 after Week 6. So Chicago looked as though this was a team that was for real, because people were questioning them after they were starting 3-0. They lose to Indianapolis, then they come back and win two more games to go to 5-1. But now things are starting to take a turn for the worst for Chicago, because they've lost three straight games. They're 2-3 in their last five, but they lost to the Rams on the road 24-10. I believe that was on Sunday Night Football there. And they lose to New Orleans 26-23 in overtime a few weeks ago. And then they had a close, they had a near comeback win last week against Tennessee when they were down 24-3, ended up losing just 24-17. But Chicago has not had that same kind of luck. And I feel like with the way where they are now at 5-4, those two comebacks in the beginning of their season, the fourth quarter against Detroit and pretty much the whole second half against Atlanta there, but those two comebacks starting to feel more like luck instead of like skill. And I think they can turn that around with the game against Minnesota tonight. They can get to 6-4, stay within striking distance there of the now 7-win Green Bay Packers team. Then maybe Green Bay maybe Chicago can start to turn their season back around a little bit. Because 6-4, getting back into the win column, again, staying within relative striking distance of Green Bay, would feel a lot better than 5-5 and losing 4 in a row. I mean, the difference between that mentally, I think, is huge for the Chicago Bears. So I think it's going to be important for them to get a win tonight. And again, home field advantage not having the same meaning this season, but still for them to sleep in their own beds, for them to be able to get to the stadium on their own schedule tomorrow. I mean, that kind of thing you still look for, you know, to try to get an advantage in this season. So hopefully that'll help Chicago tonight in the game against Minnesota, because they're going up against somebody in Dalvin Cook that has enjoyed running on divisional opponents this year. He's had 3 divisional games so far with the Vikings. They've played the Packers twice and the Lions once this season. This will be the first meeting that Minnesota has with Chicago, and the Vikings will have 2 more divisional games after this, 1 more against the Lions, 1 more against the Bears. But in those 3 divisional games so far, Dalvin Cook, now in the first game against Green Bay, he did only have 50 yards on 12 carries, but he did have 2 touchdowns in that game for Minnesota. So even though the yardage wasn't all that much, he still managed to get 2 big scores into the end zone. Now, Minnesota did lose this game 43-34, but still, Dalvin Cook with those 2 touchdowns helped keep them competitive in that game. And then you look at the second time they played Green Bay. Minnesota comes away with the win, 28-22, partially because, really, mainly because, Dalvin Cook has 30 carries for 163 yards and 3 touchdowns in that game against the Green Bay Packers. So a great second showing there from Dalvin Cook against Green Bay. Then you look at their most recent divisional game against Detroit, and this is the last 3 games. So their game tonight against Chicago, last week's game against Detroit, the week before that against Green Bay. So Minnesota is seeing this string of divisional opponents. So they do that to Green Bay 2 weeks ago. Then against Detroit, Dalvin Cook has 22 carries for 206 yards and 2 more touchdowns against Detroit. So in the 3 divisional games this year, Dalvin Cook has rushed for 7 touchdowns in those 3 games. So unfortunately, Dalvin Cook just seems to really enjoy running on divisional defenses this year, which makes me more concerned for the Chicago Bears because their defense has struggled. They're only allowing 21 points this year, but still, it just has not been great. They've allowed 349 yards overall. And, it's been the only thing I feel like that at times has kept them in it, their defense, because whether it's been Trubisky or Foles out there, it hasn't looked all that pretty throughout the season on the offensive end. But I feel like their defense, again, against Atlanta, against Detroit at times this – against Detroit in the first game of the season and throughout other times this year, Chicago's defense has been able to step up and make some big plays. They're going to need a slew of big plays from that defensive side tonight from Chicago, because they have to approach Minnesota like the Steelers approach Tennessee. Shut down the big guy in the backfield, and you give yourself a chance to get this win. So if Chicago can shut down Dalvin Cook, they give themselves a chance, because everyone knows that Kirk Cousins has struggled on Monday Night Football. Kirk Cousins has the most losses with 9 without a win on Monday Night Football since the year 2000. So he has struggled in the Monday Night spotlight. So if those struggles continue and Chicago can stop Dalvin Cook, the Bears give themselves a great chance to win the game tonight. And I kind of hope they do, because my mom's a Bears fan, so I want her to have some joy in her life after Chicago has lost 3 in a row. But I'm sorry, Mom. I feel like Dalvin Cook is going to have another big game against the divisional defense. And Khalil Mack is a star player, but he can only do so much for that defensive unit. So I feel like it's going to be a close game. I do feel like it's going to be a back and forth fight it out type of primetime showing, but I got a feeling that Dalvin Cook just does what he's been doing against divisional opponents this year and scores points and has big runs. So I'm going to pick Minnesota to win tonight, and we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens tonight in prime time. But when we come back, we'll give you a quick rundown of the Masters to close out the show here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. We didn't know if we would get the Masters this year, but we got them, and it was awesome. Little weird for it in November, little more weather than you would like to have there. The first two rounds, more effect than the last two. But definitely fun to see the Masters back this year. It was fun to see it play out. Bummer to not have any fans there, obviously, like we've had. Or the situation Compass Sport this year with not having any fans there. But what a showing. Dustin Johnson, his second major win, his first Masters win as well. And he won by five strokes, but it was looking pretty dicey there at the start. Only had a one-stroke lead after five holes, but then on the turn, able to get that back up to about a two-stroke lead, then handled himself on the back nine, able to get that lead back up to five under. And Dustin Johnson captures his second major title and first Masters win. Well deserved from Dustin Johnson there, as he looked pretty dang happy being in that green jacket. And who wouldn't be, especially when you can win a Masters like that? Rain delay, having suspension of play on the first two rounds, keeping your head through all that, and that kind of rough start in the final round. Well earned, Dustin Johnson. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk basketball and racing news as well as much more. So tune in, talk to you tomorrow. Peace.